p.m. Remember how we used to do these? You used to be in the dark by now, but now we're all sunshiny, ready to go here. So tonight, Opportunity Knocks, part four. We all look forward to an opportunity to start over, you know, in some ways. You go someplace else, you meet a new friend, or you've got a new job, or somebody new moves in, or something. And what we're going to look at is very general. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this up on the website. I'm going to type this up in such a manner that it will be like a worksheet for you folks. And I'll do it myself because it'll be good for me. It'll be a good study. And I'm not going to give you the scriptures for most of these tonight. I'm just going to give you the statement or the title, the outline as such. And then I think it's time that we go looking for the scriptures to support that. So this won't be ready until we wake up in the morning. But I will type this up. Yes, I will. I actually will. I'm actually kind of almost done packing for me as such. Just my stuff, you know, as well. I can't pack any more in my office here until I have some office to go to. I might go up and visit Hazleton this week. It's kind of a pricey drive, but I need to see what's going on. And we're not sure the house is going to be selling, so we're not packing her out of here yet. She might even have to spend a month here or less or more. Got to keep the house going. Oh, boy. Two payments, two utilities, two everythings, right? And he always worries about money. Don't we all? Money is the evil of this world. The love of it. It's the root of all evil. But unfortunately, I was thinking last night again, looking around in news and stuff, everything has money involved. There's no quality of life. There's no respect. There's no thinking of others. Just everybody is on this survival basis to keep going with whatever it is they want to do. And the money thing is just huge. And the debt we all get into in the process of it is just whatever. Anyway, bunny trail. So let's go here tonight. Let's go to get into this thing. So I'll get this thing written up and typed up. And you can fill in the scripture blanks as many as you want. It'll make you study this stuff up. Now, and this is about, let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 3. This is about Paul's manner of life. And you've heard me talk about this so many times. And I've got a 24 sermon series on all of these comments, on all of these points. And this is what Christianity is supposed to be. And I think in the olden days, as some people call them, they didn't have to make such a fuss about Paul, following Paul only, kind of a thing. I think it's only common sense that as you read through the New Testament, you read through the Gospels, and you realize, it doesn't take long to realize, you're learning about the life of Christ when he was down here on this earth. And as you read this, you realize that, you know, he's here for the Jews. This is all about him, and it's all about the Jews. And you realize that the Gentiles are the bad people. They're the heathen. And because you don't read your Bible, you know, five verses a day, and you would get done to the Gospels in maybe 3 years or something, you can get through this thing quickly, like you read any novel. You know, you just read. Some people can't put the book down, so in a week they've read this great big, huge, thick, small print book, you know. And because this thing doesn't seem to make sense to people today, so they get caught up. But anyway, in the olden days, they'd read through this thing and they realize, well, this is Christ, you know, this is what he's doing. Here's these miracles and everything. And he says not to go to the Gentiles. And there's nothing in there about the Gentiles, really. And then he gets into Peter. Well, Peter goes to the Jews and the Great Commission and they kill Stephen. And then here comes this Paul guy. And they realize what it is to be a Christian. And these are the things they need to do. And so Christianity used to have a testimony, a visual testimony to being different. Then comes along, you know, I forget the name of the guy. You probably remember him, the missionary. Who's the missionary guy now that started the Great Commission, emphasis. He's the father of missions. Who's going to give me the right answer? Because I can't remember. Father of modern missions, they call him. And the key word there is modern missions. Come on, Mark, you always remember this stuff. You've got the memory brain here. Who's the guy? come on, who's out there? Somebody type, who's the name of this missionary? Hudson, no, it's not Hudson Taylor. It's, come on now, I can't think of it myself. Nobody can remember, can we? To cut this out of the video part here. Okay, I got to look it up. Okay, I'm going to beat everybody to it. I'm going to look it up myself. Won't take me long. Because I'll just go to my office stuff. I can't. Okay. And it's right here. It's PDF. Okay. And it pops up. And it's, come on, it's a slow pop-up. They're great. Well, it's because I got the video going probably. Here it comes. Here we go. An inquiry into the obligations of Christians to use means for the conversion of the heathens, in which the religious state of the different nations of the world, the success of former undertakings, and the practicability of further understandings are considered. That's the title of the book by William Carey. Okay, so this William Carey guy comes along, and he does all these gets all these miracles and all these signs and wonders on the mission field, and which we know, according to the scriptures, is not the way God operates. And he brings those miracles and results back to America. And from that point on, the Great Commission and all of its marvelous signs and all of its marvelous wonders and all lying wonders, the Bible says, and all of its great growth gets infiltrated into the churches. And suddenly, Paul gets set aside. They get back into the Gospels for all these miraculous things to take place in their churches for growth and the whole bit. And the Great Commission thus takes over the emphasis. And somebody's got to come along and say, whoa, stop the mules. We are on the wrong trail. And get them back to Paul, but you've got to show them that that Great Commission was already done. We don't go by signs and wonders, and now we have a battle. So Christianity suddenly becomes a battle. And then because the emphasis of grace is so great, that modern Christians think everything is just do what you want, I'm okay, you're okay, and you're just being judgmental, and it's a combination of Great Commission to the Jews and combination of Paul's teachings of the Gentiles, and they got a big mess. And then they get into the tribulational stuff because nothing else is working anymore. The goodness of God doesn't work. The judgment is what they have to go to, the severity and the spankings from God, and they have to scare people into doing right, which means coming to church and writing big checks. That's where this whole thing is gone. And what Paul talks about, 2 Timothy 3.10 here, 2 Timothy 3.10, is you learn this from Paul. And what is it that we learn from Paul? He says here, but thou hast fully known my doctrine. That's the actual doctrine of Paul. Manner of life. Then he also mentions his purpose, which we've studied that. His faith, which we know is Christ's faith. Long-suffering, that we should have charity, patience, persecutions, afflictions. Those all come with this stuff. But we concentrate on the manner of life because we found out over the years that this is the hardest part of being a Christian. I mean, a sincere, Christian. And the problem is it's just, it fights our flesh, just like Paul says. We look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. We see 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 9, and this is what people... Well, like these are the opportunities. In other words, opportunity for, we're looking at here's an opportunity for us. Verse 9, for they themselves show of us what manner of entering in we had unto you, and how ye turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. People should see in us that we are not doing what they do in this world. And this world is really wicked. And for us to be a sincere Christian, in order for us to be seen that we're trying to turn from idols to God, which we know is a living God, and we know how he operates now. We understand what it's all about. And there's a manner of life there. Now, this manner of life is not a list of how to. It's not a list of things to do, although he does say in Philippians, let's go to Philippians chapter 4, he does tell us in Philippians that we follow Paul, and that in chapter 4, verse Philippians. Where's my... Here we go. Philippians chapter 4, verse 9. We see where he says, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, that's in Paul's life, his testimony, do. Okay? Which includes salvation. Salvation is not does not come across because of what we do, but the things that we do that we've learned from Paul is to have our salvation done properly, if I can put it that way. Okay, so we learn that from Paul. And those are the things that he teaches that we should do. But the real challenge is how. And that's what Paul calls his manner of life, his manner, the way he lives. It isn't just the things that he's doing, but it's how he's living the way he's living. And if we live not only by just doing the things, because see, people, all different religions, all different denominations come up with good people doing good things. Right? I mean, you know, some of these denominations, Catholics and Lutherans, they got people that do things better. They're better good, what's he call it in the movie? Good deed doers. There's better good deed doers in the Mormon church. I mean, here's a Mormon running for president. Well, that guy's got some pretty good ideas about, you know, morals and everything. So then they throw out the fact that they're different religions and they just all jump in the same ship. No, it's a backwards, it's going in the back door. But anyway, this manner of life, this is his manner of living, his way of living. Not just the things he does, but how he goes about doing what he needs to do. This is what will separate us from each other, almost, if we're not careful with these things here. Now, we're still in 1 Thessalonians here. Let's go to chapter 1 still there. Look at verse 5. For our gospel came not unto you in word only, but also in power. Now, when he says for our gospel, today, that means our King James Bible. And this means what Paul's, these are Paul's teachings. That's what that means today. And King James Bible came not unto you in word only, but also in power. And in the Holy Ghost. And in much assurance. We should get that from our Bible reading. Right? Isn't that right, little Daniel? That's what's important about that Bible when you read it. But here it says, as ye know what manner of men we were among you for your sake. So, if we want other people to see this truth of these things, we have to have a certain manner amongst ourselves for their sake. This is what Paul had with us. As ye know what manner of men we were, as Paul and his band, his people, but in what their manner was towards us. Well, our manner should be that same manner towards others. And like Paul says, we fight the flesh all the time because some other people, you want to just punch them in the mouth, you want to trip them, you want to criticize them, you want to talk about them, you want to hate them, you want to... the list goes on how we handle other people, saved or non-saved, or those that say they are saved but we know they're not. I mean, how do we live our life so people will see that we have turned our lives from idols to God? That's our goal. This manners how we should be towards other people, not just the things that we do. And then Romans 6:19, Paul says, I speak after the manner of men, because of the infirmity of your flesh. So we got to give Paul credit. He talks to us like we're adults. He talks to us like we can... He can tell us truthfully. He can honestly admonish us. He can honestly tell us what we're doing is good or bad or whatever. We don't need to be upset by his words and need to have some guy use the right kind of flattering lingo. Paul says he doesn't use flatteries. He talks to us after the manner of men. Because he knows of our flesh. He knows that we need to just be told. So Paul just tells us these things. And this manner of life, like I said here, is really, really the bottom line of what we need to study and deal with. And this is an opportunity for us, for me. I mean, I came here with a different attitude. I wanted I got it up there. I had a different attitude coming out here, and it seemed to be going well. It was slowly getting across some things to the kids, and boom, yanked out. But now we get a chance to go someplace else, and other things should be smoother. We'll see. Just like you folks, you have different people that you can talk with, or different people you can show, or whatever. So, let's look at this manner of life again. Now, like I said, I'm going to put this online. I'm not going to put any scriptures to this thing. I'm going to just put the outline up there. And you probably, we might even find some more things to put in it. Because as I was looking at this outline, I noticed a subject that needs to be dealt with. And I don't have it on my notes here. So, see, still learning. Let's go to a couple things here before we go right down this list here. And here's the question. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10. Here's something we need to consider. And the word is take heed. 1 Corinthians 3:10. This is what's important for us. Take heed. Be alert. Be careful. Here's what you need to work. This is what you need to do for yourself. Take heed. And he says here in 1 Corinthians 3:10, says, take heed how he buildeth thereupon. So we've got the foundation according to Paul's teaching in verse 10, as he says here. And Paul is our wise master builder. He's telling us, listen, folks, it's important. Take heed to how you build upon this foundation now. And see, modern Christians, they're just hanging around the foundation. They happen to have a false foundation. But regardless of that, Christianity concentrates just on the foundation. Nobody cares how they build on that foundation, upon that foundation. Let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. Now, let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 4. So this is just an opportunity to remind all of us that, you know what? What has your emphasis been lately? What are you taking heed? What are you concentrating on? Well, maybe we kind of got off the subject here because in our lives because nobody else is around us and we're just trying to survive and make money, you know. So we look at 1 Timothy again, chapter 4, verse 16. He says, take heed unto thyself. In other words, really, don't let other people get in the way of yourself. Take heed of unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. And how many people lose everything that they've got going for themselves for the sake of others? And we can humbly call that sacrificing, and we do that for other people. But remember, he says, love thy neighbor as thyself. And we realize back at Tushy that, you know, you got to love yourself. You got to make sure you got the right thing yourself before you try to get somebody else witness into this stuff. You know? So again, take heed unto thyself. Let's see here. I'll insert that rest of those verses on the taking heed. So if we're going to take heed into ourselves, this manner of life is important to us. And then it'll be important to somebody else someday. But right now it's important to us. So here we go. And you'll recognize some of these things here. Point number one. This is in an order, too, I think, of importance in our lives. Number one is to discover. Okay. You were lost, you were maybe religious, whatever it was, but you discovered something and you discovered it for yourself. See, what happens is pastors and preachers and teachers, everybody writes these books and things, and then you read all these different things about the subject in the Bible. And when you sit down and read your Bible yourself, rightly dividing it, of course, you recognize it clicks. Well, I hope that I have done my job of helping people realize this is how you read this Bible, and your question should be answered. Not because I have the answers, but because you know how to read that Bible to find those answers. And if I do give an answer to your question, you can see that truly is the biblical answer, and it's not something manufactured or rested, as Peter says in the tribulation, the scripture's being rested to make it sound like that. You see, you finally see the truth, and you get rid of religion. So you do, but you discover for yourself. You read your Bible yourself, and you can start, you recognize that, man, I'm getting it now. And it's not because of him. It's not because of that. It's not because of this book I'm reading. It's because I'm reading a King James Bible, and I'm rightly dividing it, and it makes sense. So you got it for yourself. Then the next thing you do is you decide for yourself. You got to make some decisions. And this is where a lot of people, they're still fighting over the decisions, you know. Okay, here are the decisions. Men pleaser, you want to be a man pleaser, or you want to please God? Okay. Where are you going to get your directions? From God. And where are you going to get this? Make your decision. Where are you going to get it from? Pastor only? Preacher only? Some book about it? King James Bible only? Then I have here, which book? Which book are you going to read? Well, King James Bible. Okay, which books in the King James Bible? Which set of directions are you going to follow? Are you going to follow the Great Commission directions? Are you going to follow the tribulation? Are you going to follow Paul's? Who are you going to follow? Oh, I'm going to follow Peter. Why? You want to follow Peter? Well, you've been following Peter. You're going to follow Paul. You've got to make that decision. I'm going to follow Paul. And which Jesus are you talking about here? What do you mean, which Jesus? Well, Paul worries about another Jesus. Are you talking about the Jesus of the God? It's all the same Jesus. Jesus of the Gospel, Jesus of the Tribulation, Jesus of the Great Commission, Jesus of Paul. I mean, we know it's the same Jesus, but the different dispensations of the teachings he put out there. You know, which apostle or apostles are you going to follow? Well, we're going to follow Paul. Okay, which commission? The Great Commission, or just what I've coined up to say, the Greater Commission? Okay, what's your purpose? Why? Why are you making these kind of decisions? And whose faith are you going to live on? Are you sincere or silly? Are you just going to play the game, or are you going to be sincere about this? Then it talks about cleaving. Well, who are you going to cleave to? What are you going to cleave to? What are you going to stick to here? Are you going to be ashamed, or are you not? Make those decisions. Okay, you want to find a local church? Okay, well, what kind of pastor is in there? What kind of worship? What's this thing about worship? What kind of people? Whose ways are going to be taught? You know, Paul talks about that in Corinthians or in Timothy's, Paul's ways. So a lot of decisions have to be made, this manner of life thing, okay? Then you got to depart. You make your decisions and you depart. All sorts of different places you depart from. And other people are going to try to get you not to depart. But you have to depart. You have to make that step. Then here's a tough one. Despise. I despise my past religion. I despise a lot of things in my past. But I didn't know any different. I didn't know any better. I followed people. The whole thing. And little Daniel, you're still not capable. I'm sorry. Just being your own thing yet. You know, you've got to follow, your dad. You've got to learn from what he learns from. But anyway, but you can still follow Paul in the process. Not a problem. Okay, you despise this religion. And then it says in Acts, to destroy for the sake of other people. You got to destroy what? The magnificence of it. Do it for yourself first. Get rid of the magnificence of the sports in this world that we know are destroying lady girls to make them be aggressive, non-feminist women that run the ship out there that are, you know, that's what sports does to. Yeah, sports is just fun. No, I want to destroy the magnificence of sports. Yeah, there's some fun things you can get out of sports. But for many, it's immodest, it's improper, and it destroys the family, and it destroys your future family. You want to marry a girl, Daniel, that knows how to be aggressive and fights and wins the state championship and all this kind of stuff, she'll destroy your marriage. If you want it to go the way God has it designed. Anyway, all sorts of things you can talk about. Like I said, we've got 25 sermons on this thing. 24, I think it is. Okay? So far, discover for yourself. Decide. Make some decisions. Depart from the stuff that's from all that's not doing right. Despise that former religion and destroy things in your life that destroy the magnificence so you don't support those things yourself. And it's just talking about yourself. It's going to be hard to destroy the magnificence of sports to your niece or something who's out there playing in sports. It's like it's not your duty. You destroy the magnificence of it to you, and maybe you can get a chance. It's tough stuff. When you make that decision yourself, you make those departations. You depart from some things, and you despise it and destroy the magnificence of it. People aren't going to understand. Here comes our local lawnmower again. My window's open this time, so it should be pretty loud. So when you make these decisions, and you make the decision to depart, and you despise and destroy, and other people are going to get it, you start praying for other people. Because Paul tells us to. It's just that simple. Why should we when the Spirit of God prays for us and makes utterings, you know, not things not utterable to us and all that sort of thing, and what Kiss Paul tells us to. You pray for these people that are not understanding what it is that you're doing. We need to depart and make these decisions. It's good to see Noelia and Stephen, hopefully, there. We're going through the manner of life, not just what Paul says to do, but what manner we do these things as a Christian. How do we are we this Christian? You know, we've got these modern Christians that are pretty loopy-doopy and pretty lovey-dovey and all that kind of stuff. You got that bunch. Then you got these Bible guys that are out there just thumping and being crude and being offensive, and that's not the way. That's not the manner to be. Paul's manner of life, how he goes about being the Christian he is, and it doesn't take away from persecutions. It's not trying to be the good guy in the block. You're doing this for yourself. And so far, Novelia and Stephen, we have gone from discover for yourself. You know, you've read the Bible yourself, and you're getting it yourself now. Make some decisions. You got to depart from some parts of your life. You despise this past religion that was lying to you, and you destroy the magnificence of this false religion and things that we know are destroying people. Okay, you'll have to pass it on to Stephen when he gets you. Here's your chance to preach. See, there you go. See, anyway. And the next point was prayer. You pray for others. Okay, now comes the hard part. Tears. And it's not tears for you, it's tears for these other people. Paul had tears for other people. He cared about these people. Paul had grace towards other people. So we have destroyed, then we have prayer, number 6, 7, tears, 8, grace towards others, 9, truth. Now we also realize in our studies that grace always came before truth. So you've got the truth, you've got to have grace. If you have grace without truth, then you've got ecumenical. There has to be truth. And this is truth to others. Okay, they still love darkness instead of truth. They change the truth into a lie. Who's hindering you that you should not obey the truth? Because you learn the truth. These people are destitute of the truth. They'll never get it. Ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. They resist the truth. They turn their ears away from truth. And they follow Jewish fables and commandments, and which turns them away from truth. So you're going to try to give truth to these people? Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do. That's our manner. We can't have grace towards other people. We've got to have truth. And we can't just hit them with truth because they need grace. So those things go hand in hand. And grace always comes first. Grace and truth. Grace and truth. Grace and truth. Then we have for number 10 on our list here, untouchablenesses. I call them untouchablenesses. Towards others, we have kindness, lowliness, and meekness, and humbleness. That's what we need to have towards other people. Then we have long-suffering towards other people, and we have forbearance. We put up with it. We have mercy towards other people. We have patience with others. We give honesty to others. So all those things work together. And what we battle over those things is our pride. See, we understand the truth. Other people don't. They still live darkness, like it says. They've had the truth changed into a lie. They're destitute of it. They resist it. They don't want to hear it. They've been turned away from it. And we're supposed to have kindness and lowliness and meekness and humbleness of mind towards these people. Be patient, long-suffering, forbearance, and have mercy. We have mercy towards these people. We have patience with these other people. And we're honest to them. That goes against our flesh. That's the hard part. Because they'll laugh at you. They'll criticize you. They'll reject you. They think you're nuts. Just like Festus did with Paul. Paul, you've gone mad. That's towards other people. Now, the one of the confusion aspects of this stuff is charity. We learned in our studies that charity is towards the brethren, not towards the world, not towards the lost people. Not even towards those that are confused and think they're lost, think they're saved. Just towards the brethren. But we also found out that to me, most Christianity today, charity is the most important thing, and no, it's not. We realize that this truth of scriptures is about charity. See, if you're not careful, charity can allow you to accept everything. There's that grace, 100% grace, and have no truth involved. And you'll be ecumenical in days. You'll just be ignoring what Paul says because you want to have charity towards somebody else. Now, the scriptures are still priority. And the scriptures tell us the things that are coming. See, if we stop right here towards other people, we cry for them, we pray for them, we have grace toward them. We know they don't want to hear the truth, so we're kind to them. We're lowliness and meekness and humbleness towards them. We have long-suffering and forbearance and mercy and patience and honesty, and that's charity. And we stop right there. Then we're not doing them a bit of good at all. We can't stop there. Modern Christianity stops there if they even get that far. Now, continuing on, see, what you're going to do is you're going to take these notes this week and you're going to find the scriptures for as much of this as you possibly can. I'm just reading down the list that we've been over 24, 25 sermons here. Here we go. Paul tells us in his manner of life and how to be a Christian, see, towards others. Now he says we're to walk a certain way. Walk in what? Our day-to-day walk. We should walk in, okay, he has the light of life. It's the specific faith of Abraham. We're to walk in the newness of life. We're to walk in the Spirit. We're to walk in good works. We're to walk in love. As Christ defines the love, and he describes it, and according to Paul. And we're to walk in a peace. We have a peace from God. We have a peace with. We have peace with God. And we have the peace of God. And it's all towards others, as well as to ourselves. Now, I like that peace with God because God's the one that made the peace with us. He took care of the law. He's the one that made it peace. That's why we can be at peace with God, because God paid all the penalties here. We can have peace from God because God isn't going to hang us. And the peace of God, people should see in our lives. And they should want that. We have every reason in the world for people to realize, so how do you have peace about this? You lost your job. You got to move to where? And you can't sell your house? Yeah, well, you know, we're supposed to have peace, the peace of God over this stuff. Yeah, it fights our flesh, doesn't it? And so do other people. They fight you over that stuff, and so you lose your peace of God. Stress, they call it. We shouldn't be that way. Then Paul tells us to walk not in temples made with hands, not in the oldness of the letter, not in the flesh, which we're not part of our flesh because we're cut away from it, but he's also talking about just doing these things, the works of the flesh. Walk not in a dirty walk, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, not to rejoice in iniquity, not to walk in vain of Paul's labor, not to walk in vain because of your labor, not to walk in despair, not to walk in, not in knowledge. We should walk in knowledge. We should walk not in, not rejoicing in each other. We should walk not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh. We shouldn't satisfy our flesh with how we walk. And walk not in vain. Isn't that just amazing? I mean, these are things we should not be walking in. Then he goes and tells us to put on. Okay, he tells us to put on the armor of light. That's your King James Bible. He tells us to put on incorruption. Well, Christ puts it on for us if we let him. Put on the risen Christ. Put on the righteousness of the new man. In other words, the things that he teaches us to do, put those on. He says, put on the bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness. See, that's that stuff before here. Then he says to put off. Put off the belief that the local church is holy ground. Put off the former conversation. Put off your anger, malice, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication. Put off the old man, his deeds. Put off the works of darkness. So, see, first he tells us we have to discover the stuff ourselves. Otherwise, if somebody teaches it to you, you're not going to get it. It's like anything else. When you get a hold of that Bible yourself, you're ready to learn some stuff. Then you got to make some decisions. Then you got to depart from some of this mess in your life. You got to despise where you've been to, what you've been through. Destroy the magnificence. You got to pray for other people. You got to have tears for other people. You got to have grace towards these other people. But you can't leave out truth. And you got to have truth. And you can't leave out the grace. You've got to be kind towards them. Lowliness and meekness and humbleness of mind. Long-suffering, forbearance. You have to have mercy towards other people. Have patience with other people. Be honest to other people. Have charity towards the brethren only. And then he wants us to walk a certain way. He tells us not to walk a certain way. He tells us to put on. He tells us what not to put on and to put it off. Sounds confusing. No, not really. This is just, we've detailed this thing out over the years of our own lives and experience here. Then it gets a little tougher, though, see. Because here, this manner of life is we're trying to get people to see what's going on to be a Christian. And you're around things. You're around people you don't want to be around. But it's okay to be around them if you can control your manner of life. See, the problem here is, and I've seen this happen more and more, the longer you're around the wrong crowd, and the more you stay out of that Bible, the more you're going to be like doing what the wrong crowd is doing. And that's that leaven thing. Without a doubt, I know that we are being subliminally taught. I told you that this morning and other days. Through magazines we see, TV commercials, TV ads, TV programs, pictures in libraries, pictures in doctor's offices and paintings. There's something in a lot of those paintings that is just teaching our minds something. We just don't see it happening. Magazine pictures. You just go down the list. Boxes. You just notice that things are not pictures anymore. They're paintings of pictures. And if they're going to paint this picture on the box of cereal or on a product or something or a painting in the office, you know there's something beguiling us in there. Okay, you can't shut your eyes everywhere you go, but you can keep your eyes on that Bible. And you will recognize when you're starting to get along with the same-sex marriage that we talked about this morning. Well, not only do I despise same-sex marriage, I realize that we have it within our own homes. Husbands and wives are 50-50. That's the same-sex marriage. There are no more women's roles and man's role within families. The woman feels like God hates them, and the man treats them like dirt anyway, and then that backfires. And then you got this man who doesn't want his wife to have any input at all, and it goes backwards the other way, and he becomes a dictator, and she's zero. You know, no, it's all messed up. But see, you stay in that Bible, you'll recognize what they're trying to throw on you out there. Okay. So now we get to this point. What about these other people that, you know, they're still not there for you? Well, now he says, now that we've known what to walk in and what not to walk in, what to put on and what to put off, then he says, you know, you still got to speak to others. You can't ignore this. You got to tell them sometime. You've been praying for them, right? You've been patient. You've been long-suffering. You know, you've been humble, all that kind of stuff. But you got to speak stuff. You can't just not say something. Then he says, here comes the hard stuff. Then you go to admonish, reprove, and rebuke. Oh, that's tough. Yeah, it is. But it does need to be done sometime. You've got to eventually come to that point, especially if they're starting to hurt you or starting to hurt your children or grandchildren or neighbors or somebody you care about. Something has to be said, and if you have to, you can admonish them. If you have to, you can reprove them. If that doesn't work, you can rebuke them. Now, you need to know how to do this. Okay? And if that doesn't work, you tried everything you can. You prayed, you know, and you've done all these things and your manner of life. Remember, this is manner of life now, not just things of doing. In the process, you, of course, you're modest. And of course, you're not loud. And of course, man, you're being the right kind of man. You're, according to Titus, you know, we got all those things handled. Yeah, right. But we're supposed to. Now, we're talking about this manner that we're doing all these things, and it's for the sake of other people. Now comes a really tough one. This is the tough part of being a Christian, that we probably the hardest part. And I call it make your move. And that's to avoid, withdraw, do not strive, neither give heed, purge, reject, be not partakers, mark them, have no company, put away from yourselves, cast off, and have no fellowship. Ooh, that is a string of negatives. Well, This is how Paul managed to keep his joy. So video, we're back to just you. We had sound problems on the live pal talk, so that's dead. So I'll have to cut this off in the video. We'll continue to finish this up. We were just about done, but something happened on pal talk. I hate pal talk. Sometimes I think we should just do recorded sermons all the time. You can listen to them all the time you want. And anyway. So we were just getting to where it's make your move and avoid making all these things. And this is the hardest part of being a Christian, is to avoid. Well, who do you avoid? Well, it says here that we're to avoid those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to Paul's teaching. We're to avoid that. He tells us that. In the meantime, we still have patience. We still pray for him. We still have long-suffering. You know, all those things that still take place. But it comes to a time where, you know, I gotta quit. I can't keep going because you're dragging me down or you're causing me problems. You avoid that stuff. You avoid foolish, unlearned questions. And just gender strife, Paul says. You avoid genealogies and contentions about the law. I mean, why fight about the law? We're dead to the law. You know, it's not there anymore. He tells us to withdraw. Well, who do we withdraw from? Every brother that walketh disorderly, not after Paul's teachings. Doesn't mean you have to treat them like an enemy or hate them, but you don't hang around them. And that's pretty much all of our friends, isn't it? Well, remember, if you can have patience and you can have long suffering and mercy and all the things we listed here, you can keep at it. But if it starts to become a problem, it's time to withdraw. Do not strive. Okay, what if do not strive about what? About words to no profit. It's just going to be a waste of time. And servants of the Lord, don't strive. We're a Christian. We're not to strive with people about things. God says that if they oppose themselves, they can't help being the way they are. So don't strive with them. That's what he tells us. Tells us to neither give heed to fables and genealogies. He tells us not to give heed to commandments of men. He tells us not to give heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Where are those located at? Churches. Different books, different things, different powers, music, you know, all sorts of things. He tells us to reject. Reject what? Reject heretics. If you try once or twice, be done with it. You know? Be not partakers of the table of devils, he says, of the power that pastors have over the people, among the Christians. Do not partake of fornications, unclean, covetousness, filthiness, foolish talkers, jesting, you know? We're to mark people. Mark who? Mark the bad guys that are against right and dividing. And mark the good guys who are for right and dividing. But if somebody's got a right and division problem and they're mid-axis, you still got to mark them at a new time. Now remember, you pray for them, you have tears for them, you're concerned, you have patience, long-suffering. But it finally comes to a point, you need to come to this stage, it's time to get away. That's the hard part. Note them, have no company with them. Put away from yourselves. He says, put away from yourselves that wicked person. Get rid of them. Don't put them there. Put away from yourself childish things. Then he says, to cast off the works of darkness. So have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, but reprove them. That's part of the manner of life of being a Christian. And then when none of this works, and it's just the people are still giving you a hard time, you deliver them to Satan, he says. That's the final thing. And thus deliver him to the God of this world. You want to go off in the world? Go do your thing. Let him go. Stay away from him. You still love him. They're not, you know, you just got to remember that when people get sent off to the world, you're not turning your kids or your friends over to God to work on them. It's the devil that works on them. God doesn't do that. It's the world that has to. It says here, deliver such an one as unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh. Not going to kill them, but it's going to destroy this flesh that they want to do stuff. You want to go out in the world and buy all this stuff? Go buy it. It's going to destroy. It's going to have to destroy that desire. That's what it's going to have to do. And I've delivered unto Satan Hymenaeus and Alexander that they may learn not to blaspheme. You hate God? Have at it in the world. And you'll learn that God is real. And there's a living God. And he's worth living. And Paul says in Romans 12, you know, it's the least thing we could do because of what he's done for us. So I'll put this manner of life, I'll put it on the website, and you print it off if you want, and see if you can find as many scriptures to support all these different things that you can find. and it'd be a good Bible study for you. Now I got to figure out why Panel Talk lost my sound on Panel Talk. So there you go. We'll see you folks at another time.